Welcome to the fourth dsmith.org podcast, So You Want to Be a Consultant, Part 2. I'm Doug Smith. In this podcast, I want to discuss the importance of having a website and what things I've found are important that help make it well-rated by the search engines and of some use to your career. Some of the items I'm going to discuss, I'm going to give advice that's pretty much the opposite of what the conventional wisdom in the website world is, and I'll give you my reasons for doing that. But let me discuss for a second kind of website that I don't think is a whole lot of use, a little bit of use, but any website is of some use to you. But some consultant websites that I've seen out there amount to a little more than a listing of a resume, which of course is important to have on there. And other than that, it's like, here's how great I am, all my awards and so forth, and certifications and so forth. That's okay, but there's nothing in that that would make someone want to come to the site more than once. Maybe you might refer a potential client to the site to find a little more about you personally, but it's not going to drive any search engine traffic to your site because no one cares. What can you do to make a site that someone will care to visit? Over time, I stumbled on to one of the characteristics that makes a website very useful to an engineer's career. It went along something like this. I enjoy doing experiments and writing them up. So I started the website more or less as a hobby, and I started posting these experimental results, as well as some of my published papers in PDF format. After a while, other sites start linking to the technical content, and then a little while later, Google notices all these links pointing to the site, must be a good site. So it rates it highly. And currently, if you type in high-frequency measurements into Google, you'll get something like 14 million websites. I'm number one, and several more in the first group of 10. And it's because of all these links to the technical content. That's without playing on keywords or doing anything fancy. Just the technical content. I think most engineers who reach middle age have enough unique experience to write lots of technical content that would be useful to people. And this isn't a high-effort kind of a thing. We're talking about little articles like you see in my technical tidbits, one, two-page kind of things that people can read quickly. That's all it takes. If you did one of those a month for a while, or if you want to speed the process up one a week, I think that's all it takes. The site doesn't have to be fancy. In fact, I myself don't like sites with blinking banners and fancy JavaScript and stuff, because when they're running JavaScript, I wonder what they're doing to my computer. Just plain flat HTML is fine. Engineers care about content. At least that's what I've found. So in terms of getting started, it's not as hard as you think. I would suggest go to the Mozilla.org website or the Netscape website and get the Internet Suite package. It's the Mozilla or Netscape browser. There's a mail client. But in there is Composer, and it's an HTML editor. Well, not so much an editor, but it generates HTML. It really looks like a word processor, a little bit like Word or some other word processor. And you just type in, you put in tables and pictures and text, and in the background it's generating all the HTML for you. Then you get a web hosting account for $10 a month, and you upload it to there either using tools they have over a web browser, or maybe you get an FTP program and upload it through FTP. So you don't need to spend any money for anything fancy. I still, to this day, only use the Composer. There is no fancy JavaScript on my site, just lots and lots of content. Now, of course, this isn't easy in terms of the amount of work. Over a period of time, there's quite a lot of work in doing these articles, but I think it pays off in two ways. One, it causes the search engines to rank your site highly because people link to the articles. But in addition to that, in a way, you could think of it something of a resume. People will come to your site. Maybe they're looking for help on the internet, and they arrive at your site, and they find, gee, look at all these articles this person has written on this topic. That must be something they're into, and that's what we need help on. We'll call them. So if you're an independent consultant, this is great. If you're looking for a job and you've written some articles, it can certainly help. You know, if you're an employee, you have to be a little bit careful. You don't want to write about things that are directly related to your job. And even if you write things that are not related to your job, your employer may be interested in this. I remember when I worked back at Bell Labs years ago that if you wanted to publish something outside, every single time you did, you had to get permission from someone pretty high up in the company before you could write an article. in which you are identified as a Bell Labs employee. So you've got to be a little careful about that. These days, I don't think companies are quite as hard to work with as things were back then, as long as you're not giving away the company store. But I would inform your employer or your boss that you'd like to do this. And I think as long as you just stay away from the material that you're actually working with on the job, you may be okay. Okay, so say you've written up a simple website. You've put some articles up there. How do you tell if you're doing any good? I would say staring at weblog files is a very important thing to do. Now, a weblog file is an ASCII file, generally by the name of access_log, usually in some directory of your website hosting company. We'll put you have a directory structure that they give you, and one of them is your website, another generally contains logs. And you look at this access log file, and it's just an ASCII file. Every line in the file is a request for information. And what that line in the file contains is information about what was requested, the name of the file. In this case, if you're listening to this MP3, that would have been a hit, saying that this file was requested and sent. The browser used, the IP address of the originating computer, and also the operating system, which to professional website people gives them a lot of information about tuning a website. I'm not sure at all that makes that much difference to us. Except in the case of my website, I've noticed that people visit it with sometimes very old browsers, that old machine in the back of the lab. And I designed my site to work with anything newer than Netscape 2. In fact, if you use Composer, you're pretty much guaranteed that. The other thing is, as I just mentioned, these old machines in the lab sometimes, they're not updated very often. And so you don't want to use the latest flash or anything really fancy. Another argument against using things fancy because some computers won't display it. I had one a company that I do business with, they had some really fancy flash on their site. And I was in a lab helping some people with some problems. And I said, they have just the product that would help us do what we need to do. And I went to their site on the lab machine, and it showed up a big blank because it didn't have the latest flash in it, and we never did get to see that website. I suggested they might want to go look at that. But, of course, they'll get sidetracked, and they'll never make it. You really need to get them on the first try. So don't include anything fancy like Flash 7 or something like that. One day, while looking at these log files, and by the way, the way you usually look at these things is through a software package you get from your hosting provider. Urchin is one, Analog is another one, and it massages this data, makes graphs and charts and things that are easy to understand. But it is good to look at the raw files sometimes. And one of the things I noticed, I was getting errors on a seminar announcement for a public seminar that had occurred 2 or 3 years before that date. And the errors were people were trying to access that file, which no longer existed. Because, of course, the seminar is 2 years ago. Why would I still have the announcement up? And every time that happens, when it's a request for a file that doesn't exist, it generates an error hit. So I thought, thinking what this means, what it really means is you should probably never delete an HTML file, ever, whether it be an announcement of something or ever. What you do is you replace it with another one, which just says, in this case, it might say, well, the seminar you've come to look for is passed, but click here to see the announcements of my latest seminar, something like that. You direct the person where you want to go, and rather than just lose them. So these are just some hints that I thought I would share with everyone on websites, and a lot of the common suggestions on websites I don't think apply to engineering. Fancy blinking things, moving pictures, JavaScript. I don't think most engineers care about what they would really come to your site for is a few gems of technical knowledge. And if you have them, the search engines will send them there. Well, again, thanks for listening, and the next podcast will be out in a few more days.